A gang called the Inner Demons is rampaging across New York City, searching for a lethal biological weapon called Devil's Breath that could wipe out the entire city. The only one who can stop them is a 23-year-old lab assistant who was bitten by a radioactive spider. Which makes Preeti Chipper wonder,
why is this not a movie?
Hello and welcome to Season 5 of Why Is This Not a Movie, the podcast where we look at a moment in history or a book or a story we can rip from the headlines and ask Hollywood why no one's ever put it onto the big screen. We're going every other week this season, so I have a little more time between shows to edit and round up guests. We got a terrific one to start us off with the first episode back. Joining me to talk about Spider-Man is Preeti Chipper, host of multiple terrific podcasts. Daisy Geek Girls, where she and Swapna Krishna, host of Far Out on PBS, geek out over nerd culture, South Asian culture, and where they sometimes intersect. There's also Tar Valon or Bust, where she and Jen Northington revisit the Wheel of Time series of books alongside the Amazon series. And as of this month, she's now a co-host of the Women of Marvel podcast alongside comics editor Ellie Pyle. But that's not all. In recent years, Preeti has gone from being an enthusiastic fan of Star Wars, Spider-Man, and Marvel in general, to being an author for all three. She's written the children's book, A Jedi You Will Be, the Spider-Man Far From Home tie-in, Peter and Ned's Ultimate Travel Journal, the middle grade graphic novel series, Avengers Assembly, plus Spider-Man's Social Dilemma, and its new sequel, Spider-Man's Bad Connection, which came out on September 5th, and is probably in your local independent bookstore right now, just waiting for you to pick up a copy. And most importantly, she gave us the Baby Shoes, Baby Shark meme on Blue Sky, and it's worth a follow there at Run With Skizzers. Preeti, thanks for coming on the show. So tell us about why Spider-Man PS4 needs to be a movie.
Oh, my goodness. Whenever people ask me like what my favorite Spider-Man movie is, I'm like, the PS4 game. That's my favorite Spider-Man movie. It's, I think, the piece of media that perfectly encapsulates like what I love about Spider-Man and my favorite Spider-Man, which is like early to mid 20s, like really doesn't have his stuff together, like just an absolute disaster. From the very opening scene where you see him standing at his window and all this like kingpin stuff is going on and the like eviction notice is there, it like focuses in on that eviction notice and you watch him make the choice. I'm like, that's him, that's Peter. Like, it is so good on every level.
And that is, like, I love Tom Holland and I love those movies, but, like,
yes.
He's, like, a handsome, athletic guy who's dating the most beautiful woman in the world. And, like, that's not really the Peter Parker vibe that we're, like, used to. His life must be falling apart at every moment he's not swinging from a web.
It's true. I think Tom Holland and the, like, Homecoming is another one of my favorites because I think Tom Holland like perfectly encapsulates like Peter and Spidey in a way that Toby and Andrew, who are both great, Andrew really got Spider-Man down. Sometimes the Peter was like, ah! And Toby got both Spidey and Peter sometimes was just like a little bit too quiet for my taste.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, so Tom in those movies is like, yes, he's so handsome, but he's so little.
That's true. Like,
he's like 5'5". He's like such a short little guy. And like you can see he is that dork. I think he's like that awkward. He has that awkwardness. That's really nice. Like, I love the moment they're at the party. And like he's like, I'm just going to be myself. And Ned goes, no.
Well, I also love when he's just like geeking out meeting, you know, Iron Man and Captain. But like one thing that I like about the MCU is that these characters live in a world where there are other superheroes and they react to them the way normal people would.
Yeah.
And, like Spider-Man and Ant-Man are both kind of big, and especially Ms. Marvel. Like she's just a huge Marvel fangirl who then becomes one of the superheroes. And, like that's a great twist that like we haven't really seen before because the earlier Spider-Man were, you know, existed in their own little world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun seeing them bounce off each other that way.
It is.
And
there's this
it's
great,
also
like
a way of like putting tiny Tom Holland next to these, like, next to the Hulk.
Giant. In 2014, there was this comic run called Spidey, which is, like, Robbie Thompson did, that was sort of, like, bringing Spider-Man back to the modern era, but in high school, it's very similar to what I'm doing in the middle grade series. And there's this, it's so fun. It's one of my favorite, like, back-to-basic Spidey stories. But there's this wonderful panel where he's, like, in several of the issues, he, like, fights alongside his heroes. And he's meeting Captain America and he's just like, cannot figure out what to say. He's like panicking and he just like blurts out. He just like word vomits. And then there's this panel of him just going, I'm the worst. It's so good.
All right, so back to PS4. So that's the version of Spidey that we're getting. The
Hot Yeah, 100%.
And one thing, like, I think I was just the wrong age for this, where I was neither young enough to have the PlayStation or old enough for my kids to have the PlayStation. So I missed this one, but reading up in the game and looking at the villains, like, who's the villain of this? Oh, all of them.
Everybody. Yeah. Everyone's the villain. But it doesn't feel like crowded. It feels like everyone's the villain in the best Spider-Man kind of way. Like, it all comes back to this, like, Peter has the worst luck of all time. It is that old Parker luck just over and over and over. Like, first you think it's like Mr. Negative, like, no, man, we're going to bring in the Sinister Six. Like, everybody is in it, but it never feels like too much.
It's funny. It's such a fine line. Because so many, like, there's the classic thing that the third superhero movie has the too many villains problem.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, Spider-Verse, the new one, gave us like 800 Spider-Man.
Yep. And
it doesn't feel like it's too much. It feels like, oh, this is a whole world that's very well populated and very well thought out. It's like saying there's too many Simpsons characters. Like, no, this is just a very rich environment.
Yes.
And yeah, it sounds like the game is like that. It works to add all these people if they feel like they're all kind of coexisting in a world in New York City.
Yeah, I think it helps that the game launches with Kingpin going to prison, because it sets up your idea right away when he's like being taken off. The cops are leading him away, and he basically is like, you're creating a power vacuum, Spider-Man. That's what you're doing right now. So I hope you are ready to deal with it.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was just thinking the dynamic of like, I put Kingpin away. I won. Hooray. Oh, no. Wait. Now everything's going.
No. Kingpin's like, look what you did, sir.
Oh, that's great. Because one of my favorite movie tropes that doesn't get used enough is the Empire Strikes Back / Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, where the hero's in trouble through a combination of like grit and determination and sheer luck. They get out of trouble and then realize, oh, shit, they're actually in way more trouble.
Yep.
But I like even more that it's that, but he also maybe is a little naive about like how this is going to work.
Yeah, I think he sees the big bad. And a lot of this game is Peter sort of like learning on the job. And even though he's not that like kid anymore, it's still coming of age. Like, he has this like job with his mentor, Otto Octavius. So you're waiting the whole game. You're like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like inching along in this wonderful way where like Otto just keeps popping up and things are going wrong for Otto, you know, and he's like sort of slipping a little bit, but he loves Peter. Like, he really cares for him. And he, you know, has this like trust and belief in Peter. And so you're just waiting for it to go wrong. And meanwhile, all these other things are also happening with Mr. Negative and bringing in all these other players. So it's just like so tightly written for a video game. It blows my mind.
Yeah, because especially like an action-based video game with this many villains to fight doesn't seem like it's going to be that story heavy.
So I cried. There's like when you get to like a point at the end, there's this a very like, can we go full spoilers here? How do we feel?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so if like, you're, you know, listening and you need a spoiler alert for a many years old PlayStation game.
Yeah, it's today, I guess, is the 5th anniversary of the game. I saw Insomniac tweeted because the sequel's coming out next month.
So you've had your chance to play this one.
So yeah, if you haven't, like, just watch a YouTube video of like the movie version or whatever. At, you know, the premise is initially like there's this like weirdness happening with artifacts being stolen and all these things, and Mr. Negative pops up and he has beef with the city and he has beef with Osborn, and so he is going to release this horrible plague upon the city. And eventually what happens is like Spidey has to fight Octavius for it, which is the emotional crux, is like him going up against his mentor at the end of this game. And obviously he wins, but he doesn't win in a way that saves Aunt May, and Aunt May dies at the end of this game. Oh, and wow. Like, I was like ugly crying as he is like in his suit, battered, like mask off, just like head down on May's like hospital bed in this like makeshift, you know, infirmary that's at the feast center. It's so good, but it's like so heartbreaking.
And that is such a good, like, recurring thing in Spider-Man that he can save everybody except
people's
lives.
Exactly. Like, Spider-Man is a tragic figure. Like, he is so funny, and it's his adventures can be like we talked about, you know, how funny and Tom Holland is and like all these things. But at the core, what fuels him is grief and like guilt of not being there when he should have been. That's what, with great power comes great responsibility, because if you do not own up to your responsibility, you will lose people, as he did. And so we got to see that through line of grief, which I think is integral to Spider-Man's character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To the point where I live in Jersey City, and I was trying to explain Roosevelt Island, which is this little island in between Manhattan and Queens. And there's only two ways to get there. One of them is a tram. It's like an elevated car. And I was trying to explain this to my kids, like, oh, it's from Spider-Man. Oh, well, his girlfriend gets dropped off things, because you date Spider-Man, you get dropped off a high thing.
But then you get to come back and be a spider hero yourself, and it's awesome.
But no, it is such an integral, you know, his uncle, his aunt, his girlfriend, like, just by being Spider-Man, everybody around him is in danger.
Yeah. He is surrounded by loss. And it's funny, though, because one of my least favorite tropes in everything ever in superheroes and in any sort of like hero oriented storytelling is the like for your own good. Like, I'm leaving you because it's too dangerous to be around me. I can't tell you because it's too dangerous for you. I hate it. I hate it so much. So like, another thing that I love about the game is that Mary Jane has full agency. You get to play as her. She participates in the story in a really meaningful way. It was a big influence on my choice in my Spidey series for MJ to have such a big presence in the book, because I was like, the story cannot work without her. She has to be as important. And I think the game does that in a really, really strong way.
One thing the game does that I like a lot is that it makes her a reporter for the Daily Bugle.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a lot more like in on the action and kind of has a life that's a little more connected to Spider-Man and to Peter's life than like, oh, she's an actress and she's off doing a play or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a really smart choice. And I also, I like that, you know, a lot of nerd fandom is always, that's not canon. How could you change this thing? But like, I love when there's something that's a well-established Spider-Man. We've been reading Spider-Man and watching Spider-Man things for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you can play with those things, because that makes it interesting. That's like a new way of telling the story and a whole new sort of angle on Mary Jane that we haven't seen before. And that's kind of what I want. Like, that's what this podcast is about. Like, give me a good idea I haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's taking characters, like you said, have been around. Last year was Spider-Man's 60th anniversary. So literally six decades of storytelling. And it's continually allowing this character to be refreshed in a way that keeps it modern and keeps the people around him modern and exciting. So we're not seeing the same story over and over and over and over again, because that's not fun or interesting.
And we'll get into this, I think, more when we talk about the casting, but we have these long running characters that have been going for decades and decades and decades. But to be able to tell their stories, you shouldn't have to be tied to the gender and racial politics of two. Or the 1930s for DC, or the like the set decoration and makeup limitations of like Star Trek in 1966. Like, you have to be able to move these things forward and make them relevant for the 21st century.
Yeah, agreed. And,
you know, giving MJ more agency is like a big way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or making Aunt May the realistic age for an aunt of a teenager, because
Man.
When I was a kid, she was always conservatively 75 years old.
Right, like it's so funny to me when I read those old Spidey comics. I'm like, why does she look so old? His grandma.
You know, I know people looked older back then. There was the whole thing of like the Golden Girls being the same age as the Sex and the City reboot.
Right.
But there was this idea that like, if you were a grandma, then you were a stooped over little old lady with white hair. And like, my grandma was 50 when I was born.
You know, no, like, it's very, very funny. And I love the trope of her getting younger and younger in the movies. Like, you went from like Rosemary to like Sally and then to Marissa Tomei, who's awesome. They're all great, obviously, but.
But it'll be like Selena Gomez in the next one.
That would be funny.
You know what? Like, my mom has an uncle who's like 4 years older than she is.
Yeah.
You know, that happens. Like, more likely than, you know, a 90-year-old being the mother. And I always kind of assumed, like, well, she must be his great aunt or something. Like, mm-hmm. Nope.
No. Ben was just much older than Peter's parents.
Yeah, there was like, they had those two kids at like 19 and 40.
Yeah. It's true. Oh, it's so good. I love it.
I also love that like 60 years of Spider-Man has been tied to, you know, Jack Kirby saying like, man, probably an old lady. You know, like that's probably the amount of thought that went into it. And that's just been Spider-Man for
100%. I mean, there's a book, I talk about it all the time because I love it, called Marvel, The Untold Story by Sean Ho. It's amazing. It's the history of Marvel Comics, not just the characters, but of the company itself. And the number of decisions that were just like fly by the seat of your pants is, I'm like, how do you exist today? Like that is it, that company, just by the grace of God and the amazing characters it created. It's 100%. I always recommend reading it because it is fascinating.
Well, the impression that I got was like, first of all, everybody involved from the top down was convinced like, oh, we're just making these little funny books for kids. You know, no one 60 years from now is going to be talking about Spider-Man. but also as a company, they were just like, I don't know, we're just putting out books. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's just very like fly by night and very like, and you know, like they were bankrupt several times and almost didn't exist several times.
Yep. It's truly like just the survivalist tendency of Marvel is wild and incredible. And I'm so thankful because I get to write these characters now. Yeah.
Well, it's good that they hired you once they were a multi-billion-dollar company and not...
Yes.
When, like, people had to sue them to get, like, the $5 a page or whatever.
Ugh.
All right, so do you want to talk more about the story? Do you want to get into, like, director and cast? Even the tone of this, because there's so many tones you have to balance to a good Spider-Man movie because...
Yeah.
You know, loss is so integral to the character, as you were saying, but he's also very funny. And, like, one thing that I loved, I've always loved about Spider-Man versus some of these other characters is that there is this grief hanging over him and the sense of responsibility and guilt and all these sort of dark, negative emotions. And yet he's really upbeat and funny and fun.
So funny.
Whereas like look at the DC movies, like they made Superman into like a miserable bastard. Like,
yeah.
And honestly, I think this is a little off topic, but I think One Piece is such a hit right now because it's a pirate show about a weird rubber guy who loves being a pirate and loves being a weird rubber guy. It's just like pure enthusiasm and joy. And you know, you need a balance. Like there's an old comic somebody made about like Batman, like he's punching a criminal. My parents are dead. He's like cutting in line at Baskin Robbins. My parents are dead. Like he just used as his excuse for everything. You know, Spider-Man's like Peter's parents are dead. His uncle's dead. Like he's suffered all this sort of grief and loss, and he's an awkward high school student who's being bullied. Like just all these problems are being piled on him, and yet he still is able to feel the joy in being Spider-Man.
And in, like, the people he has left, right? I think that's part of it is, like, because he has all this loss, he really feels the importance of having joy and having love for the people who are still there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really important thing to, like, I think it's an important thing for, like, readers, to young readers, mm-hmm. to be able to understand, because there are two ways of dealing with loss.
Yes.
And one of them is to let it consume you and dress up like a bat and punch people. And one of them is to, you know, like relish the life that you have and the people that are still with you. Like Jim Henson had a brother who died at a young age. And his attitude that he lived by was that life is short and you have to make the most of it. And his life was too short, but he did so much and brought so much joy to so many people. And it was really, he said at one point that it was all for his brother. That, like his brother didn't get to do really anything. And so he wanted to lead this really, you know, joyful, creative life where he got to do everything he wanted to do. And it's such a sort of healthy way to deal with grief because it's not like his grief isn't present and he's not thinking about it, but he's turning it into something life affirming and positive. You know, it's one of the great things about Spider-Man. We're getting very deep talking about a PlayStation game.
I think what the game does, obviously, like Spider-Man is not a perfect person. And so he does get consumed. He does have these moments of weakness because we're human and we're fallible. And he represents that really, really well. I think that's why people identify so heavily with Peter Parker, because of how human he is and how many times he messes up but continues to persist, you know, and continues to try and do good. So I think we're going to see it a lot in the new game. I think we're going to see that sort of like fall pretty hard in the new game. But in this one, you see it in the way he and MJ are broken up, and they have a very complicated relationship, due in no small part to he does feel like too much responsibility for her choices. And she has to be like, you don't get to decide how I'm living.
Yeah,
and
they're,
right. And it's awesome because it's this very like fallible way that Peter is looking at the way they engage with each other that isn't taking into account her perspective, really. And so we do get to see some of that. This is the game is the story is so good. It's also very, very funny. Like there are so many wonderful moments and wonderful gags that this game allows you to participate in. We didn't even talk about Felicia Hardy's in it. She is a specter over this game in this like wonderful way where she is just screwing with Peter the entire time to wonderful effect in the like DLC for the heist. It's so good. Like I can't get over how well these writers like knew all of the characters and knew how to weave them together in an interactive experience. That it like blows my mind.
Yeah, because as a writer, like it's such a challenge to have to write sort of different interactions.
Yeah,
where the game goes, but have it all also flow as a story, and to consider all these different characters and their relationships to each other, because that's really like the crux of any story is really just how the characters interact with each other and feel about each other and what they mean to each other.
Yeah,
and to put that into a game, like that's really impressive.
It's incredible. It's like, I'm going to replay. This is like making me want to replay it. I was like, what am I going to do when I finish Final Fantasy 16? And there's still like a month left before the next Spider-Man game. I'm just going to replay this.
I kind of want to go and buy a PS4. Like, Baldur's Gate 3 can wait.
It's so good. It's like Miles is in it. Like you have Miles Morales in this game also. Like every time I think about how much they included and how it still doesn't feel overstuffed with things, it all feels like so natural and so well thought out and put together. But when you're naming it, you're like, and this is here, and this is in it, and this is in it.
Right. Oh, I want to go back to something you were saying a minute ago about how Peter screws up and has to deal with the consequences of that. I love that dynamic in a game because so many games are on the mindset of like, you beat a guy and you beat a guy and you beat a guy and then you beat a bigger guy.
Yeah.
And if you screw up, then you just go back to the save game.
Yeah.
Or you just get to keep, like somebody made a joke once about like, you know, Bowser's whole life is that like, he's killing Mario and then he just keeps coming back with like
more. Yep.
So I love the game that makes you reckon with your choices and with your mistakes and where it's inevitable that you're going to make a mistake somewhere.
Yes.
Because that's life.
Because that's life. There's this great scene. It's one of my favorite scenes in the game where it's a cinematic, so it's a cut, and he's trying to figure out what to text Mary Jane and is overthinking every interaction, every like punctuation mark. And it's so good. He's like walking on like a crane or something in his Spidey suit and being like, okay, like holding his phone. He's like, well, what should I say? It's just like so wonderfully human. Like, I can't get over it.
And one of the small Spider-Man things I've always loved is just the juxtaposition of him doing like very human, very down to
earth, mundane like, things.
Like hanging from the shiny part of the Chrysler building.
Yes. It's like I was like looking through my thread of when I originally played it and all the screenshots. And there's this one where he's just sitting there, and I had the Spider-Punk suit on in the game and with like an open box of pizza on his lap. And he's like so excited. Oh, it's so good.
Let's see. So anything about what you would have to change to turn it from a game into a movie?
I think,
sounds like it's got enough story that maybe you don't.
Yeah, I don't think you have to. I think cutting would be the thing for the movie, actually, because it's a video game. So obviously you have much more room, many more hours to play with story. So I think the difficulty would be in pulling it down to like 2 hours.
And if you can take the story in different directions, figure out what
mm-hmm.
direction. And you know what? On some episodes, we come up to like, you know, movie or limited series.
This is a limited series.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm taking it. Don't cut anything.
But with the cast that's big, that's kind of good because then you get a little, you get to spend a little time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think that would be the biggest issue. So just limited series, and then it's not an issue, and then it's perfect, and you don't have to do anything.
then you can make it as long as you want. Do a bonus episode, all the DLC content.
Yes. Man, the Felicia Hardy DLC is so good and doesn't pull any punches. It's amazing.
It's also honestly kind of impressive that they can do like a very cohesive story with all these moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then add a DLC that fits into the story. It's one thing where like you get new armor or something in a DLC.
Yeah, no, this is like a whole mini movie attached onto the movie.
And so how does it work? Like, is this another story that happens afterwards, or is this like Spider-Woman introduced like while everything else is also happening?
It's so the DLC comes after the fact. And so Felicia throughout the original game is leaving you little clues. And if you do all her little mini things, you get a really cool suit. But they have this, I wish I looked at the actress's name, but her voice acting as Felicia is excellent because she's like teasing and a little condescending sometimes. It's very good. And then in the DLC, this is so messed up. But it's perfectly Black Cat, who is not a hero, not a villain, but sort of walks her own path of whatever, does it, doing what she needs to do to get hers. She heavily implies to Peter that they had a kid that she never told him about. And so he is angsting over this the whole time. And she's like sort of heavily implies that that's why she needs his help to go up against this like mafia family. But it was all a lie. He finds out that it was all a lie. And you're like, that's the most messed up thing I've ever heard. He's like, what do I tell MJ? Like, I don't know what to do. But it's so perfectly Black Cat. Like, you can't even be mad. She's so good at being her.
Oh, and I looked at the voice actress. It's Erica Lindebeck. She's Black Cat and currently one of the voices in the Owl House.
Oh, awesome. She's so good.
And she has like a long filmography of anime and video games.
That's awesome. We should also say Yuri Lowenthal's Peter Parker is outstanding. His voice work for Peter is just genuinely incredible.
And yeah, like voice actors in general are underappreciated, but game voice actors in particular,
yeah,
are kind of toiling away in the.
But it can be like make or break. Like I played the entire new Zelda game, Tears of the Kingdom, in Japanese because I did not like the English voice acting at all. So I played the entire thing in Japanese.
That's really funny. I mean, do you lose anything?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm a subtitles person anyway, oh, yeah. So I always have the subtitles on. It worked for me.
That's really funny. All right, so we make this into a movie. Who do you see directing it?
So there's this Bollywood director named Zoya Akhtar, who I love. She's so good. She's done like, I mean, it's Bollywood, so a lot of it, Bollywood movies tend to have everything, like romance, tragedy, action, comedy, all of it, which is why I think she could do a superhero movie.
This movie has everything.
Right? Really well. I think she could handle it. And she directs young people really well. I think she would knock it out of the park. Like, I think she would be so good.
Yeah, that sounds good. And that seems like the kind of energy that this movie,
right?
You know?
Bring something unique to it.
I had Justin Lim, who directed several of the Fast and Furiouses.
I love the Fast and the Furious movies.
Yeah, and he did the best ones.
Yes.
Because he's one of the best directors we have at staging action.
Mm-hmm.
But he's great at managing an overstuffed cast and not neglecting anybody.
Yeah. Very true.
And that's so important to this.
Mm-hmm.
And alternate picks I had Mike Rianda, who did Mitchell's versus the Machines, although he's only been an animation director so far.
He could work though.
And then Daniels, because you know they're
obviously
great overstated, but it's kind of too, I want them to direct everything.
There's also a sequence in the game that is very trippy and very cool. That like Peter goes through like a sort of a hallucinatory experience.
Okay.
That would work really well, I think, with their filmmaking.
Yeah, that was the thing with Far From Home. with all the Mysterio
stuff. Yeah.
They could have gone a lot farther with that, and I think a different director.
I think they did a lot of it in Doctor Strange, in the Doctor Strange
that's true too, but like
visualization stuff. But the sequence in Far From Home, just before he wakes up in like Holland, that whole, I love that sequence when he's actually fighting Mysterio and we get a little bit of like Marvel zombie action. I think it's so good.
So yeah, a bunch of people could direct this, but I think your suggestion is great, making this kind of a overstuffed kind of.
Right? I think it would be awesome.
also, you want like the, it's got to be fun and fast paced. And
yeah.
And also, how great would it be to just throw a musical number in?
I mean, I will never say no to a musical number. What's nice about Zoya is that I think she knows how to mix sort of like classic Bollywood with very modern storytelling, which is nice. Like, if you look at her movies, they all feel wildly different, but there is like a thread that you can find. So like, I think she can tackle anything. Her next movie is The Archies. It's like a Bollywood movie about like Archie Andrews.
Oh yeah.
Because Archie is like huge in India. Like Archie comics are huge in India.
I didn't know that.
Very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Okay, so let's start at the top. Who do you have for Spider-Man?
Okay, so I was thinking about this and it's the name I'm going to say is like, it could be very eye-rolly, but I fully believe this. Grant Gustin. I know that he played The Flash for like a billion years. But when I watched the first season of The Flash, that first episode, and he comes out, I was like, this is the most Peter Parker energy I have ever seen from anyone in my life. Like, I know that he is Barry Allen, and I know that there are similarities between Barry Allen and Peter Parker, but I think he would be so good at this Peter.
And I also think that's what made Flash work, because the big screen DC stuff was also dour and like,
they needed it.
Like fun and like, you know, neurotic and weird. And like, that's what you.
Yeah.
I'm double dipping with a few superhero actors too later on in the cast. So
it's like, come on.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. That was literally, I was like going through these list of actors. I was like, Evangelia, but he's like a little dark sometimes for Peter. I do like him a lot. And just going through these names, and I just kept thinking of like watching that first episode of The Flash on the CW and how it lines up so well with the Peter Parker who exists in the game.
Oh yeah, okay. And I, you know, not having played the game, I don't know specifically this take on Peter. I also had a, I don't know, maybe not a left field idea, but I was thinking Justin Min from the Umbrella Academy and After Yang.
I like Justin Min a lot. Yeah, I like that.
And I wish like,
yeah,
because his character is dead on the Umbrella Academy, he doesn't have a lot to do for the first couple seasons.
Yeah.
But he, because he's dead, he has like grief and regret and guilt, and he's also sarcastic and funny. And I know I'm 2 for 2 on picking Asian guys named Justin, but years ago somebody online made an argument that Peter Parker, it makes sense for Peter Parker to be Asian, and and the argument was, he's an overachieving science nerd who's devoted to his family and his two different identities he tries to juggle, and he's from Queens. Like, it all kind of fits and makes a lot of sense.
Like, all summer I've been making the joke that both Spider-Man and I are both hyphenate identities.
That's true. There's also the joke about, of course, Spider-Man's Jewish because it's like Lieberman, Silverman, Spider-Man.
I love it.
But I also think, like we talked earlier in the episode about, like, you don't need to be stuck with the cultural identity politics of 1962, where like it's like a bunch of white guys and one girl.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the fun of this is like, well, this is a different dimension to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Or to Peter Parker, you know, that we haven't seen. And also, I do like the MCU kind of split the difference because they cast all the white guys in the, you know, in the sort of the iconic roles, but they gave them all a black friend, and then they turned the black friends into superheroes, and now all the white guys retired, and now you have a diverse MCU. They kind of like sort of backdoor, like, I think if they had like started with Anthony Mackie's Captain America, like a lot of the angry nerd bros would have been up in arms. But now you're like, oh, Falcon's Captain America now. This is great. You know, it's a new story. This is great. I think it was like a sneaky long game on their part. But I also think like we've had a lot of Spider-Men.
Yes.
You can. And this is also just an aside that we've had a lot of Spider-Man movies. And so it's, it maybe it's tough to make the argument that we need another one. And part of the whole idea of this podcast and the fun of this podcast is like new ideas and new stories and things we haven't heard and stuff. And I'm kind of, you know, like everybody is tired of endless sequels and reboots and doing the same thing over and over again. Except for Spider-Man.
I
love the Tom Holland movies. I love the Spider-Verse movies. I love the old movies. I want them to make like 10 more of each. I want a Spider-Gwen spinoff. I want to see Tobey Maguire come back and make a middle-aged Spidey movie. I want Zendaya as MJ in a movie where no one has superpowers. It's just a hangout movie where MJ's super sarcastic to everybody. I want a movie, the old Spider-Girl comic, which was basically Batman Beyond, but with Spider-Man, where Peter Parker's like a broken-down old man.
And yes.
His daughter in the ways of crime fighting. Like, as J. Joe and Jonah Jameson would say, get me motion pictures of Spider-Man.
Let's go.
Because, yeah, I don't know why, because I'm like, oh, another Batman, Jesus Christ. Like,
well, because Spider-Man, if you do look at the movies, what's nice about the MCU trilogy is that it was unique. It felt like they really did something interesting by creating a trilogy origin story that threw everything out the window, basically. And then Spider-Verse, of course, is nothing exists like it.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be looked back on as like the most important animated movie since, I don't know, Toy Story.
So good.
Like, it just, not only it worked on every single level, but also just the visuals, it just pushed animation forwards.
Yes.
By a decade. And then also the storytelling and the characters and like everything else. And one of the criticisms of the MCU Spider-Man movies was like, oh, there's too much. There's not enough Spider-Man because Iron Man's in this one and Doctor Strange is in this one. And like, I like that because we haven't seen that yet. We haven't seen a Spider-Man who has to interact in a world with other superheroes. And who has to have like a superpowered mentor that he pushes back against. Like, you know, the closer you get is kind of the relationship with Doc Ock and Spider-Man 2. But like, Spider-Man's usually the only superhero in his world in the previous movies we've gotten. So this is a new take on Spider-Man. And that's what I want. I want, like, I don't want to make the same movie over and over again.
Right.
I want like a new story, a new, like, a new angle on the story.
Who was the other Justin?
Justin Lim.
Oh,
Justin. Direct, and then Justin Min to star.
Oh, I see. I thought you had like another Justin option for Peter.
Oh, no.
You meant Justin Lim and Justin Min.
Yeah,
got it.
So top of the poster is only Justins.
That's really funny.
I don't have a Justin for Mary Jane, though. So who do you have for MJ?
So, okay, if we were allowed to have a time machine, I have two pitches. Right. One is current, one is a time machine. Machine would be young Lori Petty.
Oh, like, oh yes.
Right? She would be so good as this Mary Jane, I think. Like, League of Our Own era Lori Petty. Like, that's MJ.
I mean, I would put League of Her Own, like, League of Their Own Tank Girl Lori Petty in anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
But current Lana Condor, I think, would be so good as Mary Jane, because I think she can play sweet and she can also play, like, really, like, go-getter, like, you know, put up a hard facade, like, a hard face. With her very sweet demeanor, I think she would be really, really good.
Yeah, I like that. I had Sadie Sink from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm going exactly to type and going with a redhead, but mostly because, like, I was so impressed by how much she stepped up in the last season of Stranger Things.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, I'm not going to give anything away, but, like, in the first season, she's kind of the, like straight into central casting, like, standoffish tough girl.
Yeah.
It's kind of we've seen that character in, like, every 80s teen thing. And it's nothing that interesting. And then in the last season, she becomes the emotional core of the whole show.
Oh, interesting.
Like, she steps up and has so much depth and is such a terrific actress. And is about the right age. Like, the running joke in the show is, if I can't come up with a young actor, I just cast one of the Stranger Things kids. But she's honestly, they're a little young to play, like, 20-something Peter.
Yeah.
Like, but also, like, another thing with the difficulty in casting Peter is he has to be a little bit of an awkward nerd, but also athletic enough to do the Spider-Man stuff, which is how Tom Holland works really well. But, like, the studios would go with, like, Timothy Chalamet and, like, Green Goblin could just snap him in half. And, like, you know, Finn Wolfhard, too, is a little too, like, scrawny to be...
Yeah, they're a little twee.
A good Spider-Man, yeah.
They're a little twee.
But Sadie Sink's a little bit older than the rest of the Stranger Things cast, and I think she could... She's also just got... a little more gravitas that I think could play, you know, like, career woman, tough reporter MJ.
Yeah, I could see it.
And also, basically, like, I liked her so much and that I just want to see more from her. I want to see her do different things. And so much of the fan casting on this is just, like, this is an actress that I like and I want to see them, you know.
I know.
Something in this imaginary movie we're making.
But it's true.
You're also far from the first guest who's like pulled out the time machine.
But I mean, why not, right?
Well, exactly.
We have the option.
Well, the funny thing is there's either guests who are like, I know this guy's been dead for 50 years, but... And then there are guests who are like, ooh, could we afford this person for this made-up movie that we're imagining?
I'm not even thinking about that. Like, if we're going time machine also, but this doesn't have anything to do with this game, but I feel like Timothy Oliphant should be Uncle Ben to Marissa Tomei's Aunt May. I think he could do it. I think if Marissa Tomei gets to be hot Aunt May, need an Uncle Ben who is just as hot to make it fair.
I mean, it makes Timothy sense. Oliphant. She's not going to settle.
Right. She should never. She deserves Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And he's also like, he's the right age to be her. He's the right age to be.
Yes.
Like,
so good.
All right, well, speaking of age appropriate relatives, who do you have for Aunt May?
Oh, Aunt May in this is a little bit older. And she's important, but she's important in the sense that she is important to Peter. She doesn't have like a huge, huge part until kind of the end when she dies.
Okay.
She's just like, she's there and he cares about her because she works at Feast. And so she's the connection to Martin Lee. And so this was hard for me. I couldn't really think of like an actress because I feel like in that role, in that version of Aunt May, it's Sally Fields. Like she encompasses that Aunt May already really well.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to see somebody else there.
I mean, that's fine. And one of the things, like, as we get into the villains too, we've gotten so many iconic Spider-Man performances, it's very hard to see somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, like the MCU didn't even try to recast like J. Jonah Jameson.
You
like,
can't. There's only one guy fair. Yeah. Right. You can't. It's like after that, how do you go somewhere else?
Exactly. And you'll see like the ones where I do try to go somewhere else, I go in a pretty different direction because what else can you do?
Right.
Well, I had for Aunt May, and again, not really knowing like her role in the game or how she's portrayed there. My first thought was like the Parkers are from Queens. I want an Aunt May who's just super New York-y. So Natasha Lyonne.
All right.
And, you know, maybe that's laying it a little thick. I also think if we have Asian Spider-Man, you could also do Ali Wong. From like Beef and Paper Girls and
yeah,
because I like the versions of Aunt May where she's kind of a tough New Yorker, whether she's old or young.
She's a little bit softer in the game, I think. Okay. I think that's where I was having trouble. She isn't that like brassy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I said like use brassy like I'm 75. Like.
But you know what, like the like Spider-Verse Aunt May, that's exactly
yes, the right word. That's who it is. It is okay. Spider-Verse Aunt May feels very on point. Maybe not as dry, but that's the Aunt May for sure.
I gotta rethink my
yeah. See, this is where I was like, who would that be? Like, it would have been, you know, maybe like a Betty White, but like Golden Girls era.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, who is that?
The time machine.
Person now.
Like, right, who is that person? I don't know.
All right, we'll put a pin on that one.
Yeah.
All right, the next name I had was Dr. Otto Octavius.
For this version of Otto, I think Paul Giamatti. I know inexplicably Paul Giamatti was cast as the Rhino. I, to this day, I don't understand it.
In fact, I have him on my list for the Rhino here just because I want to see what the hell they were going for.
It's such a bizarre choice.
But the thing is, like, he's so good. Like, I think I'm sure he had, like, a take.
Sure.
On it. And, like, I want to just corner him and find out what he was going to do.
But that's how I feel about, like, I wish we could have seen Ben Kingsley's Vulture. Like, never got, you know? But
put him in this.
But, yeah, it's true. He could have been, though. Like, Paul Giamatti, I think, is perfect for this version of Otto.
Well, yeah, if he's the mentor to Spider-Man, yeah, you want somebody who's warm and who's...
Mm-hmm. And it can have a little bit of that, like, underlying, like, this is going to go wrong and it's going to be bad, right?
Yeah. Obviously, it's hard to recast Alfred Molina because he's kind of the definitive.
So good.
So I went in a different direction, personality-wise. I had William Jackson Harper from The Good Place.
Huh.
Because,
interesting.
Well, like, okay, Molina and Giamatti are kind of the older, serious, wise mentor.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of a Doc Ock who's just an overenthusiastic science nerd.
Yeah,
and we know that's right good. In his wheelhouse. But also, You saw a little bit of what a good dramatic actor he is on The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
But I also saw him in a play on Broadway called Primary Trust, where there's only four actors and he just carries the whole thing on his back and he's remarkable. And I think he could be like the fun boss who's Peter's geeking out about science with and is, you know, he plays very smart. He plays excitable. But you can absolutely see him doing that heel turn.
You can. I actually feel like he'd be a good Peter now that I'm thinking about it.
I mean, he's like 40.
Is he really?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't look it. I mean, I can check, but I was looking for like ages when I
swear to God, I thought he was like 30.
Black don't crack. He's 43.
He's 43?
Yeah. Yeah.
He just blew my mind.
You would not know it.
That is amazing. I still think he could play Peter.
Well, actually, part of my reason for wanting to cast him here, too, is that, like a lot of fans out there on the internet, I wanted him as Reed Richards.
Yeah.
When they made the Fantastic Four. And they kind of squashed that by putting him in a very small role in Quantumania, which means right. That's his MCU guy. He's a bigger actor than that.
He does. My Reed Richards was Aldous Hodge. I think Aldous Hodge rock it as Reed Richards.
The problem is because they've been teasing us for so long with this, everybody's going to be disappointed.
That's true.
But you know what? The Fantastic Four movies have only served to disappoint us. So, I mean, the MCU has gotten a lot of tricky things. Right. But
so we'll see. Someday.
Yeah. Someday I'll do a whole episode or write a thing for Subject about like how they can sort of fix the MCU from the doldrums that they're in right now. But that's a whole separate topic. But you know, they can fix it by making this big in this movie. And I guess this isn't really an MCU thing.
This would be separate. This would be Sony.
So in the game, Norman Osborn is the mayor of New York.
Yes.
So who do you have as him? Is he even Green Goblin in the game?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Sung Kang from the Fast and the Furious movies, Han, who I love and is so good at being Han in this like sort of lackadaisical, like, you know, simmering.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah, yeah.
I think could be so cool as Norman Osborn.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be really neat to see him in that role where he gets to just be like the smarmy baddie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would like that.
And yet can be the smarmy guy who's like smart and charming and like,
yes,
you get
yes.
why he wins people over.
Yes. But
the funny thing is I had a completely different actor with the like kind of same vibe.
Okay.
Which was David Duchovny.
Huh. All right.
You know, because yes. he's like sciencey and smart. You can,
yeah,
I can see
yeah,
him as a scientist.
Yeah.
I can see him as a CEO. And I can see him as a slimy politician. And I can see him making a terrific heel turn.
Yeah.
But I think either one of them check all of those boxes.
He would be good. Also, Irfan Khan, I think, although he's already been in a Spider-Man movie, but he was wasted in the Spider-Man movie, would be an incredible Norman Osborn.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if we're bringing Giamatti back, like,
yes.
This is kind of a haven for people. And frankly, like, I think William Jackson Harper is not the only person who I felt like the MCU wasted. So this is just going to be a haven for underused
wasted roles.
In fact, let's skip over Harry for a second, because my other sort of MCU revenge casting was Jefferson Davis, who I had Mike Coulter, who was because I loved him on his show. I loved him on Jessica Jones. And then I don't think he's making the leap to the MCU along with Daredevil.
No, I probably not, would be so my guess.
He was so good in that, and he was kind of cast aside. And also, like, I buy him as a cop and I buy him as a dad. And those are the two boxes you need to check for.
But now that you're saying that, I also want him as Norman Osborn. Because, okay, so he was on The Good Wife as Lamon Bishop, as this like terrifying drug dealer, but who was very pleasant and very like polite and would like have these friendly conversations with you and on the like drop of a dime turn around and do terrifying stuff. So I think he would be really, really good.
I could see him playing that so well.
That too. Role. Ooh.
Because like the thing that I liked about his Luke Cage is he's got, like, he has the physicality for the role, but he has this kind of easygoing,
mm-hmm.
the kind of easygoing nature that people who know that they could kick your ass.
Yeah.
Like, I have, you know, like, there are sort of, like, people you see online, like, posing with guns, wearing camo and all this stuff. Like, those guys are, like, insecure weirdos.
Yes.
All the veterans that I know are the most like laid back. I had a friend in college who was a former Marine, a black belt in karate, and was the most like laid back, unassuming guy because he didn't have to prove anything.
No.
You know, he like fought in the first Gulf War. He kind of was a black belt. Like nobody was ever going to mess with him and they would regret it if they did. So he was the most chill, like friendly, easygoing, nice guy in the world. And that was a little bit of the energy like he had as Luke Cage. And I think would also serve him well as Mayor Osborne of like, you know, being the glad handling politician, like kissing hands and shaking babies.
But also very scary.
Then, like, yeah. If you catch him on the wrong day or you get on his bad side, you can see how this is a guy who rose to power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think Duchovny or Han from Fast and Furious would work as well as Jefferson Davis.
As Jefferson Davis. No, yeah. No. They probably wouldn't be able to. That might be a problem. Man, I want to find a way to put Delroy Lindo in this too. I love Delroy Lindo in everything.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he would be good as... Oh, he would be an interesting Vulture.
Oh, yeah. Actually, yeah. You need like an older guy who's bald and like...
Yeah.
Kind of resentful. Oh my god. Yeah, I'm you know what, I didn't have anybody because I couldn't think of somebody better than Michael Keaton, but I think that's it,
right? Delroy Lindo could be really interesting.
Yeah. No, I love that. And like, actually, one of the like, once a year this podcast breaks format and we do the Snubby Awards.
Okay.
Where we handed awards for the best films and performances that were snubbed over the Oscars that year.
Oh, that's fun.
We narrowed down a list of five, and then there's the former great film site, The Dissolve, has a group on Facebook where like the fans are just kind of keeping the flame alive and still talking about film. And so they vote on, we narrow it down to five nominees and they vote on the winner, and the winner gets a gold statue of Spike Lee. but when Spike Lee did the Five Bloods, Delroy Lindo was kind of the one person who everybody was like, this should have been his Oscar.
The Oscars have all their own nonsense that you're just like, I still can't believe The Green Knight didn't get nominated for anything.
Oh, I know. And there were like that one and Sorry to Bother You. My two movies were like, they didn't get nominated for everything and they should have been nominated for everything.
Literally everything. Ugh. Infuriating.
Well, that's why I do the snubbies, because I am mad about the Oscars every year, but also it's a way to celebrate the.
Yeah.
The
celebrate. Yes.
And actors like Delroy Lindo, who've just been doing great work for like decades. And
oh, he's never so good.
Get the recognition. All right, back to casting. This is maybe very dumb, but for Harry Osborn, I had Harry Styles.
So Harry doesn't actually show up in this game. He's just referenced.
Oh, he shows up on the Wikipedia page. And so
because he's referenced because he's overseas, but really he's deeply ill.
Oh, and... see, I read that storyline where he's deeply ill, and I kind of thought he was on screen for that.
No, he's right. He is this again, another like sort of specter between MJ and Peter. And there's this like mystery that's going on with him, obviously.
Oh, okay.
But that's what Osborne is doing, is trying to find a cure for his son. And that's why Martin Lee is so messed up, because Osborne experimented on him.
Oh, okay.
It's all connected. But yeah, he doesn't. But Harry Styles.
Well, my justification is I can very easily see him as a spoiled, rich, pretty boy.
Yes.
But I can also see him as somebody who's like holding on to a lot of anger and resentment.
But Harry's actually not, the comics version is not supposed to be that handsome. I know James Franco.
Yeah.
Got us all in a tizzy, but I feel like it should be that kid. What is his name? From Santa Clarita Diet, the neighbor boy.
Oh, I don't know who that.
He's so funny and he's so awkward and good. I cannot remember the actor's name. Santa Clarita Diet getting canceled will be one of the great misdeeds that Netflix did to us.
Was the character's name Eric?
I think so.
The actress Skylar Gazondo?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He was in Licorice Pizza and Booksmart.
Yeah. He, I think, would be a good Harry. Although I don't know what Harry's.
Although maybe we don't actually need Harry in the movie. I'm just.
We don't. Harry, we just need there's like a still image of Harry somewhere.
Occasionally you get flashes, but like I don't do that much research for this show. So who do you have for Mr. Negative? Because I don't really know the character outside of this game. And so I didn't really have a take on him.
I mean, the initial always would be like B.D. Wong.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately, like that's who comes to head, because he is this like sort of on the surface, this like mild mannered, like. Doing good for the city. He runs the shelter. And then there's this other side of him that is out for revenge and furious and willing to like kill anyone who gets in his way. And I feel like BD Wong could do that, like that play that role really well.
It is only hitting me now that's the description of like nearly every character.
Yeah. it's the hero's myth, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But that's also what makes it great. All right, Kingpin is another one where like Vincent D'Onofrio.
How do you beat Vincent D'Onofrio? You can't. D'Onofrio,
thank you.
He's so good.
And maybe you just bring him back again.
I want him back. When they were like 4 years ago, I was like, bring him back. If you are doing anything with Kingpin, make it Vincent D'Onofrio. And Vincent D'Onofrio favorited my tweet. And I was like, he's coming back like years ago.
That was the thing about Twitter. And I guess now Blue Sky, now that Twitter's a Nazi website and we're not going there talking about it. We did an episode on the Prydain books, which were like fantasy YA books from the 60s that I grew up on. And I had a theory that there's an intentional reference to one of those books in The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tweeted about that theory. Then the episode, we talk about it. And Ryan Johnson gave me a like. So theory confirmed.
You're like, it's true.
He didn't respond. He just gave it a like. But I was like,
that's all I need. It's true.
I still tried to come up with somebody for Kingpin. And I had a different Vincent. I had Vincent Pastore, who was Big Pussy on The Sopranos.
Okay.
Because he's also like a big intimidating guy. And we know he can play a ruthless criminal who still invites some pathos from the audience. But again, it's kind of like gun to my head if you have to pick somebody else.
It's just Vincent D'Onofrio, man.
I don't know if he's retired from acting. He's in his mid-70s.
Oh, yeah. There's also that.
D'Onofrio, you're not going to do better.
No, I think about the scene of him just like staring at the wall, like sitting on that bed and staring at the wall all the time. He's just magnificent in that role.
All right. Any more villains we want to talk about? Because some of these, like Scorpion, Shocker, Taskmaster, Tombstone, I don't have a sense of who those guys are outside the suit.
Yeah, so they're not really, they don't really participate much outside of the suit, so.
Yeah. I think you just need somebody buff with a good voice.
Yeah.
I did have, for Electro, I don't know which version of Electro was in the game, so I went with the Francine Fry Electro and cast Christina Chong from Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Sure.
Mostly just because, again, she's just an actress who, like, I think is doing really good work and should be in more stuff. But also, like, her thing on Star Trek is, in the first season of Strange New Worlds, she was a very one-note, kind of tight-assed, like, she's the security chief, so she's just a one-note hard-ass. In the second season, she gets an arc where, like, you understand her trauma and why she's so closed off, and she starts to open up to people, and then she becomes the emotional core of the show, to the point where you don't care about Spock anymore. You're just all in on her.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so she's just... It was such a smart and maybe risky choice to not make her a particularly likable or compelling character for a whole season and then have her really step up.
Mm-hmm.
So she just impressed me so much as an actress, but I also think it'd be fun to have her chew the scenery as a villain because it's kind of the option that she gets to do on that show.
It's hard because the Sinister Six really don't get much like they really just like swing in, you're fighting them.
Okay,
and then they're sort of like, they don't get a ton of like screen time.
Kind of ignore the best of them. The only other one that I wanted to throw somebody out there before was Screwball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, the Screwball. Those challenges.
Because her whole deal is she's an internet celebrity who live streams the fight with Spidey to get more viewers.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is where you do your stunt casting.
Who is it?
Lily Singh, who was...
I'm familiar.
Yeah. But for the viewers, she was a big YouTuber, and then she ended up being cast in Dollface, and she was the lead in the human lead in the Muppets Mayhem behind, you know, the non-Muppet on the show.
Yeah.
So she can act, and she's been in stuff, but
she would be good in that role.
Kind of primarily known as internet celebrity, so that seems kind of perfect.
No, she would be good in that role. That's funny. And I would also say for Black Cat, I have two, either Tati Gabrielle, who I think would be amazing. She was in Uncharted and the Sabrina, the Teenage Witch show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She's so beautiful, but she's also like really sexy and like can do that slinky walk. And she can also like do action sequences, much in line with the other choice, which is Sophia Batella, who I think would also be amazing as Black Cat. Like both of them have that thing, I feel like.
I mean, oh, and she was also in the Star Trek Justin Lin directed. So
ah, there you go.
Yeah. It's a tough combination to pull off to be like flirty and seductive and also like kind of physically threatening. And
yeah, like I could murder you if I wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they both have that. Because you'd also be like, thank you. Yes.
Right,
please
right.
Go ahead and murder me.
And there's also a difference between like what I was saying about like Luke Cage was like, I could murder you if I wanted to, so I'm going to be super cool.
Yeah.
And then the character's like, I could murder you if I wanted to, and I want to.
And I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they both have that. They're aces at it. They're both very good.
Anybody else you want on the fan cast or anything else?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's Miles, obviously, but we like that's so hard.
And how much of a role does Miles, like, is Miles Spider-Man?
Miles is pretty, you play as Miles in the
first
game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's pretty significant, which is another reason the game is so good and so, so big and fun. But for Miles, that's a hard one because I feel like, obviously, like, I was there for the heyday of when we all wanted Donald Glover cast as Miles Morales. Like, that's all we wanted in the world was Donald Glover. And now I feel like Miles, it would have to be some like unknown. It would have to be a Tom Holland situation, you know, where you cast somebody who is unknown, but who is perfect for the role.
Yeah, which is really tough to do because Miles is every bit as like complex as Peter.
Yeah.
Where you have to get somebody who can walk a couple of different tightropes.
But I think they could do it. I think they could find it.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of like, maybe there's a young actor on one of the Disney shows ready to make the leap or something.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I don't know that age level very well because all the people I'm thinking of are like older now who could have played him when they were younger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like a Brendan
I also
Bell,
think for this kind of thing, like, you almost want like for something like this where you have like a complicated personality and a range of emotions, but also like a lot of stunt work, a lot of physical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you want to get like a theater kid.
Yes. You can, totally you know, want a theater kid.
Because that's where Tom Holland came from.
It's
he was Billy Elliot.
You 100% want a theater kid.
So there's some theater kid out there who's perfect for Miles. We don't know who he is. But
yes.
Have your
but
agent
I hope
call
to see
the
you
show.
Soon.
Email whyisthisnotamovie@gmail.com.
I know.
I always love pretending, no, we're really making this movie.
I know, right? I love it.
All right. I think that's all we got is... I realized I gave you that long intro because you're doing so many things, and I forgot to plug the Rogan Gambit comic.
Oh, yeah. That ended today.
Yeah. So go back and pick that up. Yeah. Preeti just does so many. You're the hardest working woman in show business.
I say yes to a lot of things. I was like, this week in particular, I was like, I'm having a very big week. Tuesday, Spider-Man's Bad Connection came out. Wednesday, our Women of Marvel podcast episode 1 dropped. And today, Love Unlimited number 66, Gambit of Rogue part 6 came out on the Marvel Unlimited app.
And for the listener, today is Thursday. I'm going to release this on Monday. So it's not, all the stuff is still fresh and new. And
yes.
You know, go
and
out
today
and
is the September 7th.
And follow Preeti on Blue Sky at Roma Skizzers for like updates and all this stuff.
It's true.
Because you've had so much stuff to post.
I know. I was like, I'm so sorry. I'll go back to my terrible jokes soon, I swear.
But it's the thing about publishing is that
you
like,
gotta do it.
When the stuff comes, you can have three things that came out that you wrote in different years.
Yes.
You know, like my last book was delayed because of the pandemic, and then it was delayed because of supply chain, and then like when it came out, I was like, oh, that thing I did 2 years ago.
Yeah, I wrote Bad Connection, I wrote last year. Gambit and Rogue I wrote 6 months ago, and I recorded these Women of Marvel podcasts all summer. This happenstance.
Well, this is a lot more seat of the pants, so I'll edit this over the weekend. And
yep.
And this is why, for the listeners, this is why there's very differently length breaks between seasons, because I will get into a sort of a frenzy and record a bunch of these. In fact, the second episode I'm recording in 20 minutes.
That's hilarious.
Because it was like
Godspeed.
It was the one night you could both do it, and so that one will be out in 2 weeks. And yeah, it's just a madcap like rush. And then I get to a point where like I run out of people to ask, and then I take a break.
And then you start over again 6 months later.
But I was so happy to have you on the show. I've been a fan for a long time.
Thank you for having me.
Listen to all the Preeti's podcasts and read her books and comics and everything else. So be sure to pick up Spider-Man's Bad Connection and all of her other books. Check out Daisy Geek Girls and Women of Marvel. If you have any thoughts on Catching Thieves Just Like Flies or ideas for other movies that need to get made, hit me up on Blue Sky at Mike Vago, because I don't have a separate Blue Sky for the podcast yet. And you can read Student Journalism, reviews of Star Trek Lower Decks and Apple TV's Changeling written by me, and hear College Radio and listen to other lesser podcasts on our parent website, subjectmedia.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks on...
Why is this not a movie?